Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma and Zach Celadonia.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and joining me here to my side, my buddy, my colleague, my pal, a Dale to my chip, a one flash Zach Celadonia. Hey, Zach, how's it going, man? See any good TV or movies over the last weekend here?
Oh, yeah. Got Obi-Wan finished. Very happy with the conclusion.
Absolutely.
I know that the comments are kind of 50-50 on this show on people who like it and who don't, but I loved it. We watched the highlights probably like five or six times, similar to after the Steelers win a game. I'm all about the highlights and rewatching what I can on Twitter. And now that I finished that, we're doing the Star Wars episodes 1 through 3. Then Obi-Wan, then episode 4, Binge Sesh. So you know the lady of the house is loving that right now. Super enthused to be taking part with me. But yeah, just Star Wars and Steelers. Apparently that's my new MO.
Yeah, man, I'm right there with you. I like the old final scene. I'm still not going to spoil it in case people are still binge watching or whatever. But I know there's always going to be problems and complaining, as we always talk about. But I mentioned the Chip and Dale, the Rescue Rangers thing. Obviously, you have Disney Plus. If you're ever a fan of Who Framed Roger Rabbit back in the day, this is kind of like the spiritual successor. I was at Disney, you know, the previous week with my duty. I was like, did you get to see this yet? And I'm like, you know what? It's on my radar. I just hadn't had a chance. It was one of these cartoons that were after school, you know, back when we only had, like, I didn't have cable growing up. You know, Fox didn't have the NFL because Fox didn't really exist yet. There was like ABC, CBS, NBC, and that's about, maybe you had a PBS that came in kind of blurry with the whole rabbit ears, and that was about it. But they would have cartoons on it, like maybe like 3:30, whenever you got home from school, and it was like Transformers and G.I. Joe. And then Disney had a slate with DuckTales and then Chippendale Rescue Rangers, right? And so this is like hybrid animation and a real life setting. And it's like how almost like, you know, like Where Are They Now kind of Hollywood thing, like all mixed together with cartoons and kind of a similar landscape and maybe even plot sort of kind of with Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It was really, really cool. And if anybody liked Space Jam, which is definitely not a cinematic masterpiece by any means, either one of them, but particularly like the last one with LeBron James, it was pretty cool because of the cameos, right? You had all the Warner Brothers stuff that was thrown in there. Do yourself a favor and watch Chip and Dale if you have the same kind of, I don't know, attraction to being like surprised to attention to detail and things like this, because it's not only Disney properties that show up in this movie. It was pretty darn slick, and it's something I'm going to have to watch a second time, just like Space Jam got me too. It was like, yeah, this movie isn't very good, but you end up having to rewatch it because you're like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme that's pointing at the TV. Hey, I spotted that. I saw that. So anyways, that was the highlight of my rather low light weekend, as I, you know, crashed down to earth and just kind of relaxed and didn't do anything other than listen to a bunch of people out on social media about the usual Steelers complaining and whining. I go back and forth between the Star Wars crowd and the Steelers crowd when it comes to this. But before we get to that, we had one major omission from our rants last week. And we were talking about running backs and how Steelers picked up free agent running backs. And we left one out. And it's probably because I hate him more than Ben Tate. I hate the word hate. Strongly dislike LeGarrette Blount. We forgot all about him. And the whole reason that the Steelers got stuck with Ben Tate was because of that jag off to begin with. I had other choice words.
I forgot it was the same season, actually. But yeah. I forget LeGarrette Blount was here all the time because he was here for like a week and a half. So whenever someone shows me a picture or I come across someone talking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was even here. And there were moments where I thought that was going to really work for us, and him and Le'Veon together, what that could have been. Everyone knows how I feel about Le'Veon. And him and Blount, they could have made sweet, sweet music together, but instead they got high together. And that was the beginning of the end.
Then I got high. Just yeah, like the song.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Blount always, it sticks in my craw because there's the set of people will still go back to talking about how the Steelers, Kevin Colbert, etc. They didn't plan for Le'Veon Bell. They would just run him into the ground and then have no backup plan. And the backup plan was Blunt, but he didn't want to be a backup. And lo and behold, yeah, the New England Patriots or whatever, there's still something shady that happened there because they had those injuries at the running back position. And conveniently, he, you know, tucked tail and ran right back up there to Foxborough and Bill Belichick. I mean, Belichick. And I always slip at the tongue at that. I mean, it's amazing. Jesse caught it.
Slip.
It's yeah, but you know, and then he does things up there and it's like, oh, well, look. And it was like, yeah, you know, it's the same thing like Melvin Ingram, man. It's like,
I was just going to say, it wasn't a question of like us wanting to keep him. It was a matter of him like being a jag off and not cooperating. That's what a lot of people don't understand when they get all mad that Colbert, like air quotes, lost Melvin Ingram for a sixth round pick or they cut LeGarrette Blount. You can't like think beyond that thought, man. You can't realize that having someone like that in the locker room and in meetings and stuff, it's a cancer. Like, people overuse that term with football. Anytime a guy acts out, oh, this guy's a cancer. But if you're refusing to cooperate and like participate in meetings, James Harrison pulled the same shit, like, and he had to go, you know? So like, even James Harrison, who's like Steeler royalty, he started to pull similar crap to Ingram and LeGarrette Blount, and he had to go. Like, it's just, you can't have that in your culture. And whether or not that's on Kevin Colbert for not being able to get more for him, I think that's just kind of stupid to draw that parallel, because the rest of the league takes notice and they all know what's going on and they see the news stories and the headlines, and everyone could see that Ingram wasn't happy because Rappaport was reporting it. It was on TV. Same with LeGarrette Blount, who walked out of the game versus Carolina. I believe he literally left with time left on the clock. And then James Harrison, it came out that he was sleeping in meetings and stuff. So the Steelers' hand it was forced. They didn't really do anything wrong in any of those scenarios. They had to do what needed to be done.
Yeah, same thing with my boy Antonio Brown, who just decided to leave a game, didn't start no showing practices and stuff. But it's like, when you come in at this point, like Melvin Ingram, it's like, okay, they got a sixth round pick for Melvin Ingram. He played half a season. His ass was getting benched for Alex Highsmith. I bring this up all the time. Alex Highsmith, who had more QB hits, more tackles for losses, more sacks, more everything. He was a far around better player, but they were cutting their throat when it came to giving him playing time for Ingram. Now, Ingram got more playing time at the beginning of the season. They were trying to find ways to use all three linebackers. They were rotating him. TJ Watt got dinged and got hurt, and he got a little bit of that taste, man. You know, the good life. Like, I'm playing, I'm starting. And then all of a sudden, TJ's healthy. They want to play Alex, and it's like, well, this is kind of what we got for you, about maybe a third of the game snaps or whatever, and the dude just wasn't happy. I don't know what fit he threw, but it just makes me wonder what he was thinking, because when he came into camp, it was because TJ Watt wasn't fully participating and was having his sit-in or whatever the hell we're calling this crap now, like his contract dispute, right?
His team-friendly holdout.
A team-friendly holdout. That's a good, I like that. That's a good one. But it drives me nuts because, okay, you got all this time at camp. It was more or less because you're getting paid to be the veteran, to be here, to fill this space where otherwise we have, like, you know, a guy that's like, you know, they're stitching his gold jacket right now. You know what I mean? Unless he screws up. I mean, they've already got the sleeves like ready. They just got to like size like the in, you know, the interior and maybe the length, all depending. Yeah. But,
that's TJ Watt as a model, and they just go off of that jacket and knock the waist down a couple sizes, you know.
I always wonder, like, he, you know, JJ had such a tear at the beginning of his career. I think he's in that conversation, but injuries have not like helped him much. The whole Megatron getting in just kind of screws up the whole thing. Before,
yeah, definitely. If Megatron's in, who I love, JJ's getting in. Cause you got that three-year stretch of defensive player. Didn't that break a record? No one ever did that, right? So like, he'll get in for that alone.
Remind me to come back around right to that for a second, but it was like, the reason we were bringing this up was because we were talking about potential maybe other Omar Khan targets. Yes. And finding a running back, and they had Blount, they had him in place in case Bell got hurt and dude quit on the team. And that's what it amounts to. Melvin Ingram, you know, quit on the team when he found out, you know, the younger guy that they're investing the resources in, who was outplaying him, was going to play more. Gee, you think, you wonder. And he still fleeced the Kansas City Chiefs for half a season for a sixth round pick. They get a sixth round pick and not just nothing is something. Letting James Harrison go, it still cracks me up because James Harrison played against, like, he was playing with backups and up in New England that final week, and he had like two sacks, and the NFL put out like the big graphic and everything, and it's like he sacked Bryce Petty. I think Bryce Petty completed three passes in that game, like, entirely. Like, of course he should. I mean, he's, there's no denying his talents. And Harrison's a good segue to where I wanted to come back to. And that's, there were some comments recently that if the Steelers had won that Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers, that Hines Ward would be no doubt a Hall of Famer. Okay. Potentially, because he's got more hardware, right? I still, when I did this, and I did these exercises with Harrison, and I did the exercise with Hines Ward a little while ago, and maybe someone else. So I was trying to see who else might have been Hall of Fame material coming off of some of these former Steelers squads. And this is like a whole other topic for a whole other show I think maybe I'll bring up. Ward, he got to 1,000 catches. He was up there. He had longevity. You had a rule named after you. Super Bowl MVP, right? Did he get a Super Bowl MVP? Yeah. Yes. And Holmes did too. Yeah. So, yeah, not Ben, which is, you know, that one's always like kind of weird. I get it. It takes two to
tango. If he had thrown to anyone else for the touchdown, it would have been Ben, but Santonio had the whole drive too. Like, he didn't only have the game winning
catch, but he had two big
catches on the drive. So that's probably why.
But I don't think that the loss to the Packers disqualifies. It goes right with us bringing up Rashard Mendenhall just in the last show too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think it disqualifies Hines Ward from being in Hall of Fame contention. He's there. He's like always in the conversation, semifinalist. There's going to be people that keep jumping him. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like a Donnie Shell that just takes forever to get in there. It sucks because I think his off field or just the intangibles, always smiling. You remember the hard hits. He's left something memorable, and that's the thing that I made argument with James Harrison for too, because his sacks, like, you look league wide and he's not anywhere near that, and TJ Watt's about to pass him this year for the team or the franchise.
It makes total sense because Harrison took like a good while to get going and get rolling, so it makes total sense
and played forever too, and on and whatever, but you know, he himself has some other hardware and MVPs and led the league in sacks.
Sure. When he was on, he was incredible. Absolutely. When he finally got to play and was starting for us, he was incredible for like a 6-7 year stretch there. So he deserves all the accolades and the props. I hated how he had to end things here, but I definitely still respect Harrison. If he ever asks, please tell him I said that. So he's cool in my book.
Yeah, you know what, though? Like, it was a hard guy. Like, you know, I still, even for everything that Antonio Brown done, if he could stop being a clown and just... Harrison just turned right back around and was like, okay, my career's done, and I'm cool with Pittsburgh. And, you know, he came out and he had that football life and everything in that documentary. Like, I did it for this reason and that. And you're just like, wow, like, you know, how can you not respect what this dude's saying? He was just real. Real is real. He just doesn't seem to go whichever way the wind blows. You know what I mean? Like... And that's Antonio Brown wearing like a Lamar Jackson jersey or whatever, trying to get signed a 1-day contract with the Steelers, which we mentioned with Mike Tomlin. That ain't going to happen. But yeah, Harrison, by the way, what was it? 2007 to 2011. There's 5 Pro Bowls, 2 All Pros, defensive player of the year. He's in those conversations. AP MVP was like 4th. In that running too, like, it was just unbelievable. 16 sacks that one year, the big year, 2008. Steelers defense was unstoppable, and he gave us one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history, which was also a record. So those are the reasons why I say what I say, and I guess we almost had another show on just the Hall of Fame talk, but we're talking about people going home and putting on jerseys and whether they want to stay, whether they want to go. And we're in that same situation as we're going to talk about the secondary today, because we lead off with Joe Hayden, who apparently, you know, oh, I only hated the management in Cleveland. I don't hate the fans in Cleveland. And it was just, man, he's just buttering people up, isn't he? And there's some people talking about it. And how can Yins let him go back to Cleveland? And I'm just kind of like, look, man, dude's 33 and couldn't stay on the field. He's always had some injury problems here or there. The previous years before last season were, I think, COVID list related more or less. Great player, but father time is undefeated. The Steelers weren't going to pay him. What was he making last year? Like 15, 16 million? I got to look this up real quick.
Yeah, but I think something close to that. He had a high cap number every year he was on the team. Yeah, definitely making upwards of 10, over 10, I believe. Strongly.
Yeah, yeah. So, talking about Joe Hayden. Yeah, if he goes back to Cleveland, I mean, I don't think he's a starter.
I don't sprinkle him in a little veteran action, like little coach on the field kind of guy for sure. I don't think he would start necessarily. I know because they obviously have Denzel Ward, and I'm struggling to think. I know they signed Johnson and they got Del Pitt. The other corner, I'm not having a good time here.
Delpit's safety, but yeah, how about
Newsom, that rookie, right?
Greedy Williams. Mention Greedy.
Greedy, that's right. I was forgetting Greedy.
Yeah, Greedy just kind of avoided that one because I kind of liked him. College, I was like, but yet another one that hasn't panned out due to injuries too. But yeah. Joe Hayden, another guy that if he could catch the ball a little more, like Ike Taylor, would probably get even more recognition than what he has. Dude is made. Wow. Imagine this. Imagine having your salary public for everyone on the internet to see at any time. He's made almost $124 million in his career.
Very lucrative for Joe Hayden. Smart businessman.
Yeah. Yeah. So when he was released by the Browns, which was supposedly, I don't know, like a cap thing or whatever. Let's see. Over the course with the Pittsburgh Steelers, trying to pull this up here. Trying to see what he was making last year. His cap hit was 15.5. I don't think that was necessarily his full money. A lot of this was changed over or restructured into bonuses because he had like 8.5 and 7.5 just as bonuses and not his actual base salary, which is base salary.
That's so funny to think that, you know, Witherspoon and Levi Wallace between the two of them. I think Witherspoon was $6 million and Wallace was $8 million. So like that's 14. That's less than Joe Hayden's cap hit. Witherspoon and Wallace's full deals.
Yeah, I know. And he's just passing the torch to this guy, Minka Fitzpatrick. That's the reason why. Like, hey, Joe, if you want to come back and be in that coach dad role or whatever and play part time, I'm sure there's special teams. I'm sure that the Pittsburgh Steelers could need you or could use you. Definitely they need the depth, maybe. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out because you've got three dudes now that kind of like all like line up and have very similar roles. And depending on when we want to pay attention to Pro Football Focus, I called them the right name today, by the way, because now we're going to probably respect their stats, right?
Yeah, yeah. As long as it goes the direction we want it to go, then that seems factual.
Excuse me, man. Dry throat. I was losing my voice over the weekend. Need some more coffee here, Zach. It would probably help wet my whistle. But yeah, they're not going to pay. Hayden was like one of the top, if not the top, cap hit, maybe even contract at the position last season for 2021. So the Steelers are not going to invest that kind of money in 33-year-old guy that missed, what, 4 games at a minimum and pieces of others last year. It's just kind of like, it's tough. That's the way it goes. It's part of the business end of it. I love Joe Hayden. I really care less if he goes to Cleveland. I think he kind of just, he's one of these guys that might sign with a team for one more year and then just kind of fade off. And you'll remember, we'll bring his name up like 5 years from now and be like, hey, remember that signing that happened because somebody released somebody? And that's what I really see Omar Khan doing. They're going to snag somebody that gets released. Camp and or cap casualty. Usually at this point, it's not a cap casualty. You've already got to be under the cap or whatever. And the other news with that, by the way, since we're speaking Browns and cap, Deshaun Watson stuff's about to go down too, and we're about to find out what his discipline is with that 230 plus guaranteed. Da, da, da.
I bet Watson wish he put a cap on it, like, or stopped himself from doing something. Because it seems like every day there's something new coming out. I was just scrolling Twitter a second ago, and I thought I saw that there was one of the four victims who haven't taken a settlement yet. Trying to go after the Texans now because they had a hand in like trying to cover it up or whatever, or organizing it supposedly, you know, allegedly. So yeah, they're dealing with the storm up there. And then yesterday you had some dude, can't remember who it was, but he was checkmarked verified. And he said they're close to a deal with sending Baker to Seattle. So might be seeing Jacoby Brissett or Josh Dobbs twice a year this year, which is fine by me. That's great. We'll take them.
I'm telling you, there's some Yinzers that are like, hey, trade Mason Rudolph over there. And it's like, for what? They gave up all their draft picks for Watson. There's nothing else that I would take from them. And I know that's shooting for the moon, but I would really make them squirm. And if I'm Seattle, they don't take on any of the salary. Screw that.
Yeah, make them pay for Baker, or at least do half. Smart teams will do that. They'll be like, yeah, we'll take him, but you got to pay half.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same goes with the I heard the way Pro Football Talk, I think Mike Florio was saying that some blue check
fellow Italian Mike Florio, shout out.
A full season suspension would pause Deshaun Watson's contract for a year, putting him under contract to the Browns through 2027, not 2026. It also would replace his $46 million salary in 2023 with his 2022 salary of just a little north of $1 million. And as we just saw there, the retweet here was, I'm not sure who Michael David Smith is. He's also with Pro Football Talk, managing editor. This is something a lot of people are missing. The $1 million base salary was only a great deal for Deshaun Watson if he's suspended for part of the 2022 season, not if he's suspended for all of 2022. So the contract tolls. And it's funny because I was watching some of the stuff that Pro Football Talk's been putting out here too. And they were mentioning something about, let's see. They're still saying like they're defending Deshaun Watson. They're not trying to get him suspended for a year and all these other things. But then they're saying, well, I wonder if the Browns could bend the fence with Baker Mayfield. And it's just like, come on, man, that ship sailed if I'm Baker Mayfield. And I don't know why you would want to play. I don't know. You would probably still get along with your teammates and stuff, but with the management and the coaching staff and everybody that basically like told you that it's a way worse situation what people make it look out to be, because the Steelers brought in Mitchell Trubisky or drafted Kenny Pickett with Mason Rudolph. We're also, don't kid ourselves, Baker Mayfield was the number one overall pick, and this is a guy they were surrounding rallying the troops around and thinking, hey, you know, they beat the Steelers in a wild card game and they gave it to the Chiefs or whatever. I still say they could beat Chad Henne, but you know, who am I to say all that? So it'll be interesting. We're going to have some more AFC North news around the corner, and that could definitely impact our topic too with the Steelers and their secondary. We already kind of spoke ad nauseum about Minka Fitzpatrick already, but so we'll lump this together. Let's just look at the other starting safety who I said he was an important free agent signing this offseason. I'm surprised he didn't have more feelers, but this whole sort of free agent market this season for safeties has been like kind of all over the place if you really think about it. And like, just remember the Honey Badger, how long were we trying to court him for? So
forever. Like 2 months. But yeah, it's been that way for safety for the past few years, going back to my original guy Trey Boston.
I wanted him
in Pittsburgh for like two seasons running or three, and he was one that took a minute to sign. And there's other examples too. Guys just kind of sit there on the market, and I don't really have any rhyme or reason to explain why, but it's been a phenomenon that's been happening the past few off seasons where the safety market is just, I don't know, maybe teams don't think they're as important as I do. You know, my theory from last show that if you have an elite one, it can really help change your defense. But maybe teams just, they seem to be more inclined to put their money into other positions and kind of wait safety out, try to draft somebody first. And Steelers got lucky, I think, because Edmonds, in my opinion, deserved a larger market in what he got. But fortunately, I'll take him back 100%. And they got him for a cheap deal. Also great, cheaper than his fifth-year option. And we didn't lose him to the Bengals, which apparently was the like front runner to sign him besides us, them and the Dolphins, I believe, is what I heard. So came on back, came on home, and it's only going to be better for Minka as well, because the two of them have developed such a good chemistry and understanding of what each other is doing on the field already, that it was a smart move from many angles, aside from just keeping him away from the Bengals and retaining a guy for another year. His continuity in the secondary, specifically with Minka, would be hard to replicate with somebody brand new immediately. This way it'll be a smooth start to the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he's somebody who gets kind of ragged on maybe a little too much, because there's too many people are interested in just vanity statistic. And I have some of those. He actually had some last year. He got to the quarterback. They allowed him to blitz. He had 8 tackles for a loss He had some really, really beautiful plays that were like, you know, stopped short and stopped drive short with those tackles for losses, too. Again, only the one sack, one time getting a quarterback hit. He did get two interceptions, and he's had two in each of the last two seasons, six passes defense. People, they'll rag on those sort of things, but you tend to forget most of the stuff he is guarding is underneath stuff. Yeah. And I think he's really become like a utility player to help, not so much against running backs, but I see it against the tight ends.
Yeah, he doesn't line up in the slot.
But like 90% tight ends and the occasional wide receiver, maybe a running back if they get, you know, sent out wide the opposing formations. And he's lining up out there and doing a lot of dirty work that people don't see. And that was kind of the thing. Like Troy Polamalu always got all the glory. Ryan Clark, you probably remembered for like a hit here or there. Does anybody remember Ryan Clark? Is Ryan Clark even have like a career interception? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
sticks out? No.
None.
The only ones I think of were like just like deep balls that went wrong and like he caught him like a punt, you know? No offense to Ryan Clark. I think he was a perfect partner for Polamalu, but yeah, he wasn't an interception guy either, like hardly at all. Good separator from the football from the receiver, you know, good at doing that, absolutely, but not a big interception guy by any means.
No, just about the same exact numbers, to be completely honest. We'll take out his last season in 2014 with Washington, age 35, by the way. Pretty interesting stuff, too. He got to be an old man in the league, which is pretty cool. 8 years with the Steelers. Originally, you know, he started out with the Giants and with the Washington Redskins for the first 4 years and came over as a free agent. So another one of those kind of big free agent additions right at the tail end of the Bill Cowher era here in 2006. That's why I always say, too, like the whole Mike Tomlin inherited Cowher's team. Well, not the Super Bowl winning one, the one that failed to, you know, defend their title. And you had 3 years separated because Ryan Clark did not play in a Super Bowl for Bill Cowher, among several other players. But his picks each year is like 1-0-1, 3-2-1, 2-2-1. He had like 100 tackles all combined. He had like a one sack. He had two career sacks in his time with the Steelers. Just two. That's it.
Like, not his forte, apparently. Not a big part of the defense back then, maybe.
Three quarterback hits. I mean, that's it. I mean, we're talking about, let me see here.
He just did his job, did his role.
12 interceptions in 8 seasons, 111 games. All but two of those as technically starter, which for whatever reason that could be when we're talking about different formations and stuff. So get off Terrell Edmonds' back, maybe on a trajectory. No, maybe Ryan Clark. Steelers, a franchise, maybe great, or at least one that, even if you're not going to say great, really good, somebody that's that people have some fond memories of, because he trucked people.
He's a Pro Bowl. Too right? Doesn't Clark have at least one Pro Bowl?
Yes, 2011.
Yeah. Okay, I thought so. Yeah.
Yep, 2011, and let me see. That was because back that year.
2011. Maybe he had a couple big hits that year. I know he had a lot. Like the Wes Welker hit, the McGahee hit, but I think those were before 2011. Those stick out in my head. He tattooed both of those dudes, knocked them both out.
It's even more important to kind of point out that that was his Pro Bowl year. Do you happen to remember why? The 2011 season. Do you remember how that season finished with the 12-4 Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, that was wasn't that Packers Super Bowl or no?
That would have happened just before that. Yeah, that was the 2010. This was the Tim Tebow overtime game. It makes it even crazier to when you think about it, because he goes to the Pro Bowl that year and then they don't have him on the field for that playoff game. And there's so many people that complain about Tomlin and playoff wins and stuff like that. And yet, another key chess piece. We talked about Bell earlier and Blunt leaving, and mentioned Shazier just briefly. I mean, it just sucks the way some of this like just has turned out. The Steelers have not had luck of being a very healthy team. That's why I say, like, I want to see the Bengals. What do they do if they're 100% healthy? And Joe Burrow's a dude, but come on now, if Jamar Chase gets hurt for like 6 games, that's going to really severely impact them, or even Mixon for that matter. So we'll see how that happens. We'll get into that a little bit more as we get closer to training camps and things of that nature. What do we think about the safety depth, though? I mean, even if Edmonds has been solid, too. He doesn't get hurt. He's always available. So is Minka. So you haven't really had to think about trying to throw Miles Killebrew's back. Carl Joseph, who barely played, is back. Trey Norwood was a seventh round pick, is back. Then they add DeMonte Casey to this mix, who I completely forget about in that whole free agent mix. And yeah. I think they're pretty well set. I think they just like they want like a certain structure of guys. Don't forget Arthur Millette was sit playing safety. I mean, Killebrew kind of was too. They kind of all kind of flirt with being this dimebacker role, and that's the way they used Edmonds. And for all intents and purposes, I mean, Edmonds is going to be like a starter, but I started to see like Edmonds came off the field some last year too. And it was more like sub package type football a lot of times, especially when we were talking about, you know, covering tight ends and whatnot. Steelers are built specifically to try and stop what they're going up against. And that's within their own division, particularly like the Ravens and all of these tight ends. Or if you got to win the AFC, Travis Kelce over there with the Kansas City Chiefs, or look at the Raiders with Darren Waller. This is what they got to do. So Edmonds is
Bills with Josh Allen. You got to have athletic big dudes.
Well, they can chase down the quarterback. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You got to. So, and that's not to say that Minka can't, but when Minka's 20 yards off of the line of scrimmage, that makes it a little difficult for him. Quarterback's going to pick up 10 yards with his legs easily and just scoot out of bounds before that's even like a factor. So you need somebody else that's going to be playing a little bit more up on the line.
That's
the other thing that's kind of forgotten is, you know, I'm conflating Ryan Clark free safety with Terrell Edmonds strong safety. Again, like as you said, they ask different things, but I'm just trying to say you got like one guy that's like the superstar and gets the glory and gets all the gaudy statistics and numbers and the big bag with his contract, and the other guy doesn't necessarily, but it doesn't mean the other guy isn't doing some of the dirty work. People will still to this day try and say Edmonds was a reach, Edmonds was a bust, blah 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 blah. I've never been on that train of thought whatsoever. So let's kick over, speaking of Minka, let's kick over and talk about some of these other guys that are on the field with them. They got three corners that I think could all be kind of interchangeable here. Of course, Cam Sutton flirts a little bit with playing kind of a safety role, a dimebacker role, nickel corner. But is he a starting outside guy still? Because as I mentioned, the Pro Football Focus, phonies, fairies, whatever we end up calling fantasy, they liked Levi Wallace a lot last year. You had Levi Wallace to Akella Witherspoon going from dud to stud. After what the Henry Ruggs, there's a name to throw out there. It's already long forgotten in the annals of the NFL. But that long touchdown reception where they lost to the Raiders, I believe that was the game with Witherspoon, where he was just thrown out for a snap and caught off position. And as a professional, as an opposing offensive coordinator, you recognize these things. They always go after the fresh blood, the guy who's been sitting on the bench for three quarters and stuff like that. So I don't hold it necessarily against him for that one play. He started to make other splash plays. Does he have the same kind of skills, Witherspoon, that is, in coverage? And then you got Wallace, who was filling in for, was he filling in for Tre'Davious White up in Buffalo?
I believe. Well, he was a starter regardless with him, but yeah, I mean, yeah. White did get hurt a couple of times, but Wallace has been the two up there for like the past 4 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been solid, and it's kind of almost unimaginable at this point. When you think about it, it's weird. A few years ago, this is all we were talking about was Joe Hayden, Minka Edmonds, and Steven Nelson. Yeah. And it's like, now you don't have Steven Nelson or Joe Hayden here. But I think of like maybe Wallace in the same kind of aspect of like Steven Nelson. And Steven Nelson, I think, just was another one of those where I think they kind of headed this off at the pass, as you were mentioning before. You're having some sort of conversation with the players like a Melvin Ingram, LeGarrette Blount. This is going to be your role this year. We're going to re-sign Cam Sutton, and we're looking to allow him to get some major PT. And Nelson's like, nope, I'm out on this. And, you know, maybe even take a reduced paycheck a little bit too, because they were up against it with that cap money and Ben and restructuring everything last year. They were really pushing it. Weren't they like, what was it, like $30 million almost, like over the cap because of all the COVID stuff? It was, I forget the number. I used to have it embedded in my head.
I know, I think Ben, it was a perfect storm with Nelson too, because he also, like, I think they timed that up really poorly with trying to get him to take a cut, because I think he wanted more with like how, like, if people remember when Nelson started playing for us, he really was kind of playing above expectations, at least his first year. In his second year, he was still very, very solid. But his first year, he came out like you would have thought we got one of the top corners on the market. We technically did, but he was still like a lower level name that not a lot of people knew how good he was going to be. So on top of them re-signing Sutton and telling Nelson probably that Sutton was going to have a larger role, and then him not wanting to take a pay cut, in fact wanting more money, it just like it fell apart so fast. He's one of the most forgotten Steelers of all time. I had his jersey too, but like just a waste, even though it was a cheap
that's
one.
That's interesting. So, I didn't know that. Did you have Mike Mitchell?
Yeah, for sure. Mitchell was one of the first ones that I had that I got from like a cheaper website. I won't say anymore because I want them to keep pumping out the cheap jerseys.
Yeah, we don't necessarily talk about those things, although I did have this mention around Poolside recently. And it was lady had a dog named Larkin after Cincinnati Reds. I guess this one, like right off of that, I'm like, that's such an odd name for a dog. But Barry Larkin, shortstop with the Cincinnati Reds many ages ago. And I was just kind of like, he was talking about something about like a Carson Palmer jersey and how that just like went out of fashion and only got to wear it like 5 years or something. He just got on this like talk about jerseys. And it's like, yeah, you got to buy like a throwback guy or. Yeah. Or by the guy who just got the big contract, like a TJ Watt or a Minka, and then you're kind of safe for a while. And they might be a lifer or something. Otherwise, you know, you order from the China Express or wherever, you know, and I'll leave it at that. And I'm not without fault for some of that too. It's just, you know, dumping $150. I'd be interested in hearing some of this on the comments too. Are you willing to dump 150 simoleons on, if you didn't get them already, let's say Pat Freiermuth? You're not going to do it with Chase Claypool right now, are you? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't. That seems like, you know, and people that were buying Juju jerseys, they're now out of fashion. Although if you got in on that early, maybe you got 4 or 5 years out of it. So it's such a tough thing. If you want to support a guy or put the name on the back, a lot of people will just buy and won't even buy jerseys anymore. But in Pittsburgh, it's always interesting because unlike other places, you go other places, like I just mentioned, Cincinnati or Cleveland or whatever, you'll see like a Trent Richardson jersey still, or somebody puts duct tape over the back of the name. You know what I mean? Because there's so many players that burn out that don't live up to their billing. Now, Cincinnati's starting to get a stable of guys that are there. But, you know, is anybody wearing Vontaze Burfict still around? You still see people wearing like Terrell Owens jerseys, and he had a cup of coffee there. You know what I mean? So in Pittsburgh, that don't happen. You see Green, you see Lambert, you know, you don't see Bradshaw as much, though. But you'll see.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. That's a weird one. Maybe his like a little harder to find nowadays. You can find anything. Maybe like throughout the early 2000s, his was a little harder to find.
I think his situation is more how much he's ostracized himself from the fan base at certain yeah. periods of time too. But you'll see Hines Ward. You'll see Polamalu. Now you're going to see Ben Jersey. So you see James Harrison still around. Heath. You'll see the occasional Mike Wallace or something like that still floating around. Yeah. So, but anyways, not to get too far off track there. Hey, I'm not sure I'm buying any of the jerseys of some of these guys that are here in the secondary, but I'm kind of interested in seeing how the Steelers may intermingle some of them. This was my top priority free agent signing. We already mentioned him briefly, Cam Sutton last year. He is a chess piece. He's a Steelers guy. He reminds me most maybe of like a Ryan Clark when he lays the wood, but he's not allowed to do it in the way that these guys used to. Mike Mitchell was that way too, but Mike Mitchell also would miss some tackles trying to fly in like a missile, but still loved him. He was another guy that sat on the free agent market that didn't go anywhere either.
Yeah.
That same year with the Trey Boston thing. But I don't know. How do you see this, man? It's like last year, the way they kind of worked this around was Sutton was playing outside with Joe Hayden. And then eventually when they figured it out and Joe Hayden was kind of like gimpy and then coming back on the field, they would have Witherspoon come in when they needed the extra DBs and slide Sutton in. And I'm kind of wondering if they're going to do something very similar and maybe have Wallace and Witherspoon both kind of starting, or if Sutton still starts on the outside. And somebody's going to bring up inevitably, oh, well, he sucked against Kansas City. Well, show me a secondary that didn't. You know what I mean? Like, guys get torched by people named Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes. That's just the way it works. So,
yeah,
again,
they got burnout.
Yeah.
They got burnout after sticking with the offense for like, what was that, 16, 17 minutes of awesomeness when the Steelers like had a chance to beat the Chiefs. That they got burned out because the offense couldn't do anything. So I don't really look at anything from the Chiefs game and really judge it with that large of a grain of salt. It's That's why it's a grain of salt. It's small. I really don't think much of the Chiefs game is going to give you anything concrete to look at and think it's going to apply to this season. Hopefully not, anyway. But I think you nailed it briefly there on the end when you were wrapping up and you mentioned, is it going to be Witherspoon and Wallace on the outside with a combination of Sutton going in for certain things, but always being the slot? I think that will be the case because Sutton can do it all and he can play pretty much any spot you want him to. He's a very smart guy and cerebral and he has experience in all the different spots. But Witherspoon and Wallace both are primarily solely outside guys. So it's not a matter of, you know, Sutton can do the outside duties, but the other two can't do the inside duties. So I think you'll see Witherspoon and Wallace as your outside guys and Sutton as your slot guy. And then depending on, you know, who wins out in camp and who the Steelers feel most comfortable with, and maybe they'll do matchup-based things, you might have packages where it's Witherspoon and Wallace. Witherspoon and Sutton, or Wallace and Sutton. You know, like, I think Sutton will still get used on the outside and sprinkled in, but when they go three corners, it'll be Witherspoon and Wallace on the outside, double W's, and then Sutton in the slot. I think that'll be your base package and your nickel package, variations of that. And then your depth. Mollett's interesting because I think Mollett earned himself a nice role. I think you saw that reflected in his contract when the Steelers brought him back. And he got more and more playing time, it seemed, as the season went out. He's a sure tackler. I like that about him. Not the best in coverage, but not exactly enough for me to say he's a liability by any means. So he's really good depth to have for a nickelback or a dimebacker. And then you have the wild cards in Pierre and Justin Lane, who I have no clue what's going to happen with those two. I've mentioned before, I'm kind of pretty much more or less out on Justin Lane. Seems like a fine young man, but he just can't put it all together on the field. He helps on special teams, but I don't think there's much hope for Justin Lane, at least in a Steelers uniform, to get any kind of starting time unless something goes horribly wrong with the top three dudes. Pierre had his chance last year, and I know there was a moment or two where he shined and helped the Steelers in the wins, but they were few and far between. And I don't think they go out and sign a guy like Levi Wallace or make it a point to keep Witherspoon around if they had any sort of confidence in Pierre or Justin Lane. So I think the top of the depth chart, I'm rather excited about, and I have a lot of confidence. And I think they have good experience between the three of them. They've all started games outside. Sutton, a combination of outside and inside, but I like our top three. I think Mollett is solid, and then you got the last two who I don't know what's going to happen with them. And safety, I don't really have much to add other than I think they're pretty much set at safety right now. I think the starters, obviously Minka and Edmonds, but Terrell Austin did say something interesting. I don't know if it was Austin or the other DB coach, but he said to a reporter that Edmonds' starting job is his to lose. It was a really weird thing to say. So maybe you're on to something there with they have more of an idea to not necessarily bench Edmonds at all, but sprinkle him around in different spots and maybe get more use out of DeMonte Casey if he really is sticking out in camp like we heard that he was. And Trey Norwood obviously carved himself out a role last year and performed extremely well for a seventh-round pick. And then Miles Killebrew, special teams demon, and Carl Joseph. So I think looking at that, Carl Joseph is probably the least safe of the group, but he had to have known that going in already after last year. So
yeah,
nothing against him, but he's definitely bottom of the depth chart, but he's a former 16th overall pick. So good bottom of the depth chart piece to have.
Yeah. His problem has also been injuries over the years and being healthy. And you know, he had an opportunity. He had many opportunities, including like Cleveland didn't have anybody that could play safety a couple of years ago, and he couldn't crack it there, and he didn't have a real chance to crack much more. And Steelers brought him back more or less because I still didn't think that they knew what they were going to do with Edmonds. That kind of is the
exactly,
same thing with Casey.
They didn't have Edmonds back yet.
Yeah. I'm not sure that they knew that they were going to, and you may have ended up with like some combo of Norwood, Joseph, or Casey.
Yeah,
competing for the starting role there. I don't put Killebrew in the same sentence there because, like you just said, he has a position that's labeled there. He got posterized a couple times last year, but he's mostly like special teams guy.
Arthur Mollett sent him to oblivion.
Oh, it was like in the same game you had like Najee Harris and Nick Chubb both with some angry runs highlights. So give him the scepter. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, Arthur Millette. Oh, look, Arthur Millette, we didn't mention enough of. And I think that's he's another guy that they brought back. It just reminds me of somebody that's quality depth. Is he going to be playing more like an interior kind of dime backer, nickel corner where they've slotted him in there? Absolutely. So that kind of mitigates my major concern when you add him to the top three. We're talking about with Cam Sutton, Levi Wallace, Akella Witherspoon, Arthur Millette. Okay, next guy is really not going to get on the field unless there's injuries or whatnot. And it'll probably be Justin Lane. I think the James Pierre ship is long sailed. It's so far like away, like it's like a tiny little dot. You don't even know it's there anymore. That Bengals game and T. Higgins just abused the living hell out of him. That was bad. Yeah. It was really
bad. Chase had the long touchdown, too.
Oh, but yeah, yeah.
On Pierre.
Yeah, I mean, they're just all over the field. I know he got like a lucky pick here or there. He struggled with, I want to say, Tim Patrick with the Broncos, too, in that game with Teddy Bridgewater / Drew Lock, two-headed monster back and forth. So it's just like, yeah, James Pierre, camp phenom, but you see why sometimes guys are undrafted and they flash and then that's it. It's like
it's a business, too. You know, like he had his shot and he fumbled the bag, as the kids like to. Today. Like I think they both have, Lane maybe a little less, but Pierre definitely had his shot last year, times over, and just didn't play well enough. And in the NFL, if you don't play well enough in your window, the window shuts. So
it really is not for long league. And like you said, the guys who end up having the draft pedigree, being the first rounders or whatnot, or having a lot of people scouting you coming out, they're going to get more chances. More than likely, because, and you have a lot of changeover with like coaching staffs, front offices, scouting departments, and things of that nature. But don't be surprised, like Brandon Hunt, for example, going over to the Eagles, right? There's going to be people that they probably scouted during his time with the Steelers, or people that are with the Steelers right now that might get a second opportunity now if they're cut, released, they'll go over to maybe Philadelphia and have an opportunity. Now it's a network. It is a network and a brotherhood too. But it is a lot of networking and who you know and who knows you. And that happens a lot. That's why we were looking at, when we were looking at running backs or potential, like any type of like camp casualties or anything like that to get cut, looking at the teams the Steelers would be playing, maybe have film on people within your own division. That's why it wouldn't surprise me if Hayden did go back there. Wouldn't actually surprise me if Hayden even went to the Baltimore Ravens. That just depends on where his heart is, where his head is. Is he just trying to make a buck? Is he still believe he could play? Et cetera, et cetera. You know, Rod Woodson surprised the hell out of us and made a complete career change. There's another dude that played way past, you know, like what he was supposed to. His prime was over as a corner, and he was playing to about 40 as a safety. Is pretty crazy stuff. But
oh yeah, dude, I wish I would have gotten to see more of Rod Woodson. He was just a little before my time, but I know I would have loved him as a player, because I mean, Troy and Minka are two of my all-time faves already, so that he would fit right in that category. Exciting defensive back play is just one of the coolest things in football. I was thinking about that this morning, like, what's cooler, like a game-changing interception where, like, your team is given new life, or like a touchdown tying scenario, you know, or like it's so close because they're both such monumental things. And I was thinking about this because I was thinking, am I really still a fan of the turnover team photo? Like, do I really still like it? Because a lot of people seem to hate it now, but I still love it. And I think it's just because the feeling of an interception or something like that is so great that my like intolerance for the team photo is just masked by my excitement of the turnover. And I think I've tricked myself into believing the turnover team photo is still a cool celebration, but I think they might need to do something else. But again, I can't tell, because after an interception, I'm just so jacked up and excited.
I hear you on that. And the defense needs something, too. You can't really celebrate or do anything close to the quarterback. Ask Cassius Marsh about that.
Thank God.
You probably, you might not know this. Longtime listeners might, the 2%ers that are still hanging on here. By the way, Rod Woodson played until age 38. At 37 years of age, in 2002 with the then Oakland Raiders, he made a first team all pro still as a safety his next to last year in the league.
I genuinely did not know that. That's crazy.
That's after he got his ring, of course, with the Ravens. Unfortunately, he had a few years there too, but that's where he switched over, and he went from being like a corner, still made a Pro Bowl in 96 with the Steelers, went over San Francisco. He's 32 years of age. You know, Woodson is like another trailblazing guy. Problems, you know, top pick, guy that they were trying to sign, all of that rigmarole. Free agency comes around. They end up paying Neil O'Donnell more money than him, and it really, you know, probably doesn't sit well with them. Like, there's a lot of things that are interesting there, but he's still considered a Steelers guy, and even though he played for the enemy in the same division, still comes home, and that's, again, my favorite all-time Steeler, Rod Woodson, in case you didn't know that.
Good taste.
Yeah, got his autograph, got several of his jerseys. Like, I am not an autograph seeker. I'm a jersey guy. I love jerseys, but I don't, like, I'm not going to go chase someone down to the bathroom stall and slide something underneath a photo and say, hey, sir, can you sign this? Or bother them while they're having dinner with family and stuff like that. I just think some of that stuff is just so tacky.
I'll accept them as gifts, but I'm not an autograph guy either. I think it's just so weird to like to ask somebody that, in my opinion. Like, if you're a little kid, it's nothing wrong with it, but I just can't stomach that. And if someone else wants to give me a gift, like shout out the listeners, maybe I'll take one, but not, I don't ask an athlete for his name on a piece of paper or
yeah,
jersey.
Yeah. And you know what? It's good that you bring up little kid, because the way I kind of approached that with Rod was, you were my favorite growing up. Do you mind? Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's exactly what it was. He was like my hero, and you would have loved, he was punt returner, kick returner.
Oh, yeah.
And they lined him up in the backfield a few times.
There's like our own Deion Sanders over here.
Yeah, exactly. Deion before, you know, prime time before there was prime. So, hey, Zach, man, I'll do it for us, man. Got to put a bow on this. Apologies.
Oh, yeah, brother.
Apologies for my voice, everybody. Like, things, hopefully I didn't cough too much into the microphone. And I'm speaking into it. I did turn away the other day, and it's like, that's because I'm trying to look into camera one. I'm trying to look into camera one. So, got to look at this beautiful dude right here. Yes.
Me?
Yeah, what?
Aw, dude, shucks, thanks. You're buttering me up for the very end.
Yes, that's what I like to do. So we already talked enough nonsense at the beginning. We won't close with the nonsense at the end. We'll save that for the beginning next time.
Because, yeah, thanks, everyone.
Because I think we've wrapped on all the different position groups finally. We're going to need something else to talk about. If there is something you want us to talk about, feel free to ask. Training camp is about one month away. I think it is, dude. I think they report in exactly 30 days or something like that. It's pretty close.
We're in the dead zone right now, man. I mean, freaking Larry Ogunjobi saved my ass last week. Our asses, I should say, because there really isn't jack shit to talk about right now. I'm going to keep coming back for the people. I love the people, and I love the Steelers, and I love my co-host, and I love our platform that I've been blessed to be a part of. Thank you, listeners. Like and subscribe. But there really is no, like, news to talk about. We're like, oh, what do you think about the secondary? What do you think about the linebackers? I'm glad people are listening, and I love it, dude. But yeah, if you have any ideas or any topics you want us to discuss, Steelers or Star Wars, feel free to comment.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I just typed in Steelers to see what some of the headlines were coming around from other places, and it's just kind of like, can Alex Highsmith be more? Just that just dropped, and it's like, wow, we were just talking about Highsmith. That's kind of eerie. But people are also talking, could the Steelers be waiting to add a running back? Thanks for tuning in as well. We know who you are.
Crazy how that works.
Yeah, got us on alerts and stuff too. It's fine. It's okay. I listen to other people sometimes. It all depends.
And when I got time.
Yeah, when I got time. I got to make time for me here. Time. So, folks, yeah. Follow what Flash here said. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And again, apologies. I know I started coughing at one point. Hopefully it doesn't like blow out your ears if you got some AirPods or whatever in. Hopefully. So yeah. Hey, I was looking up the date here just to see not only what came up with Steelers, but exactly a month from now, players are reporting training camp started. Can't wait, man. Just right around the corner. So that's going to be really, really cool.
Away.
Hey, this is an interesting one. I wish, you know, I think I've told you this before. I had this Steelers calendar, and it's always like 2 years behind, like with the stats. Like, what quarterback from Maryland won 9 of his 12 regular season starts for AFC champion Pittsburgh in the 1995 season? Oh, my God. Speak of the devil.
Oh, O'Donnell.
It was he who shall not be named.
I wouldn't have known. I didn't know he went to Maryland. I wouldn't have known that if you had told me that. I was like, did Mark Malone go there? I thought he was Arizona State.
I had one that was such a random one, and I think I saved it. Here it is. Let's see. Here's one for the people. Well, maybe if I, I'll forget the answer, so I'll just say it here anyways. Longtime quarterback Ben Roethlisberger shares uniform number 7 with what former Steelers signal caller who is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Pete Gonzalez.
What's that?
Pete Gonzalez.
No, no.
He wore this number 7 in the early 2000s, I think.
It's almost a trick question because of the answer, but I'll give you this 1 second. People also ask when you're looking this up on Google, is Adam Sandler a Steelers fan?
Yeah, he is, right?
His character in the remake of The Longest Yard was even a quarterback for the Steelers, but Sandler may not deem the Steelers as his favorite team, as most forums, message boards, and pictures indicate he's a bigger fan of the New York Jets. It's kind of like when you see Snoop Dogg or something. I was in one of the Hard Rock casinos just recently, and there was a Snoop Dogg Steelers jersey. Like, it was kind of random. Like, there's like a Bon Jovi, whatever he wears on stage, and there was a Snoop Dogg Steelers jersey custom.
What number was it? Snoop Dogg. 420?
I think it was like double zero or something like that. Yeah, 420 probably would have worked. But anyways, the answer to this, who wore or shared uniform number 7, also a quarterback for the Steelers, formerly of the Steelers, it's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You'd never get this. This is Jim Finks, 1949 to 55, really going back. It's like he was inducted as an executive.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yep. If you don't believe me, sometimes these are actually absolutely wrong too. There it is. This was from last week. So I saved that over here somewhere around. I got the pens, you know, I got everything thrown around here. I had to save that one because that one was like, whoa, that's a real, like, they put that one up at Heinz Field's board and everybody's going to be like, A, B, like, they don't know which one it is. It's like Jim Finks.
I never heard of that guy until just now.
A made up name. Yeah, it's kind of sad. It's like, oh, what? Aren't you a real fan? Man, geez, oh, man. It's like, come on. Is there anybody alive who saw him play? Maybe. Maybe we have some technologically savvy senior 2%ers out there. So let us know if you saw Jim Finks play. I'm sure Brian did. Somebody asked where Brian is. He's on the other side of the world. We'll get him maybe later in the week connecting from long distance. We'll see what his internet connection's like. But
If we're so lucky that he'll grace us with his presence.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So. Until next time, folks, that'll do it for us. My name's Joe. His name's Flash, Zach Celedonia, at @ZEFlashNFL. Follow me at @Joe_Kuzma. Get our own personal plugs in there. Don't forget the other places you can follow us. I said the like, comment, subscribe, leave ratings, review, send us money, all kinds of things, right?
Gifts.
Until next time. Yeah, gifts. A Steven Nelson jersey. It gets you somebody that hasn't been playing or something like that.
Yeah, we should do a giveaway of all my old jerseys. Steven Nelson, Mike Mitchell, Martavis Bryant. These could be yours.
They could be yours or they could be headed to the nearest landfill. Like, it's your, the choice is yours. Probably have an easier time, like, getting rid of, let's say, like a signed Antonio Brown jersey, which I won't relinquish, but probably an easier time getting rid of that than giving out preseason game tickets. Like, probably. No joke. So next time, folks, my name's Joe. His name's Zach. We encourage everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.